Mr. Nurse, Reel 6. You just got an incident you thought of when you were in France. Right, so yeah. You'd like to drop that in.
Just an interesting one. We'd been advancing rapidly across France. They're just odd nests of machine gunners or perhaps the occasional anti-tank gun holding us up occasionally. But anyway, we were stopped to re-ammunition and to be fed. And all the crew were out of the tank. And I thought, well, I'll TNA the gun. That's been testing and adjusting it. So what you do, you put a crosswire over the muzzle and check, you know, get the telescope, say, 1,000 yards range, and the gun pointing at a nice, sharply defined object, and just two to each other, you see. And I thought to myself, ah, but what happens when I put a shell in the breech? So I put a shell in the breech, because, you know, the weight of it would have made some difference. And then I was called out by Captain Lamont, as he was then. So, yes, I took the, obviously I had to take the firing pin out of the cannon to do this. And I left the round in there, you see, not thinking that anyone would do anything about it. So young Taffy Millard, who had been released from whatever duty he had got back into the tank, found the firing pin on the side or on the radio or something of that sort, put it into the bloody breech and fired the thing. And it was a hell of an explosion. The shell exploded about 20 yards in front of the tank. So I rushed back into the turret, and there was Taffy writhing on the floor of the turret, you know. And the recoil hit him in the solar plexus, and there's only about that much space between the radio and the breech. And he was on duty the next day. And about 2 months later, he found he had a broken wrist. No, that is only a minor thing, but it's one of those things that sticks in one's mind.
Now, any other stories you remember from any time during the advance? Because I know it's a bit episodic, but yes. I mean, it's difficult to remember in sequence 60 years later. Mm. So, anything else? Are there incidents from the fighting you recall?
Not at this moment. Perhaps that's something I shall recall later on. If it's not, we can go back on it, presumably.
Now, so as you got near, there was quite a lot of fighting in the sort of Turtenberger Forest. Do you recall that at all?
No, the C Squadron, I don't even think the regiment was in Turtenberger Forest. I may be wrong, but certainly C Squadron wasn't.
Right. And another quite famous occasion is when there was a fatal accident, when a Comet, a very similar incident, accidentally fired a 76mm gun going into harbour, and a driver was killed and Gilmore was wounded. Were you aware of that incident?
Well, the only incident I was aware of where that happened was when we were liberated Belsen, and we were motoring line astern, and some trigger-happy guy fired and hit the tank in front and certainly killed one or two of the turret crew. I don't know who commanded that tank in front, but the sergeant commander was put under open arrest. And
do you know who it was?
Who was killed? No, I don't
know. No, who would the sergeant who was...
No, I don't. I really don't. But he was made up the next day, or within the week.
What about Belsen? You didn't actually go into Belsen, did you?
I personally didn't, but some of our people did. It was pretty dreadful, by all accounts. You know, this historian who made the Holocaust was a load of nonsense. Well, should have seen this himself.
And did you realise what was going on? Was that news to you?
I think we were rather shocked. I don't think we realised there was anything like that existing in what you could call a civilised state.
So you hadn't heard of the concentration camps?
Well, we probably heard of them, but not realised the conditions under which they were operated.
Anything else about the, the approach? You were moving up towards the Elbe, and anything in that period, moving through Germany?
I'm just trying to think of...
No, we're just sort of looking at some general things. Mm. One thing is, I mentioned, we're just talking off tape, but I mentioned an officer, George Trotter, who was, I think, second in command for a while, probably left by the time they got to Germany, but what did you think of Trotter? Did he make an impact on the unit?
Well, he was known as Piggy for a start, so that's not a good start, is it? No, he didn't. He was, in my view, I hate to say this, and he was a somewhat arrogant character, very fond of his rank and being second in command of the regiment. And he may, as I've said, he may well have been quite a brave officer in the First World War, but he just wasn't into tanks, as so many ex-cavalry officers were.
Were there a group of officers round him who were more cavalry than armoured?
No, I wouldn't say so.
He was the one...
Only the Colonel, Alex Scott, and Trotter.
And I'd just perhaps like to talk a bit more about Le Mans, because in one way, earlier you said you love hate relationship. We talked a bit about that, and then, but then we've got three or four stories which show him behaving in a ruthless manner, whether you're justified or not. It's up to other people to decide. Yeah. Perhaps you'd like to talk a bit more about what you thought of Le Mans, and because you want to emphasise, I know, that he was a very good tank commander, and I want to sort of balance it out.
Eric Anderson Le Mans, he was good-looking, intelligent, ruthless, and physically powerful. He was dab-hand at sketching with a pencil or a pen. His writing was beautiful. He didn't have much of a background. He was a shop walker at Woolworths, I think, before he went into the army and got his commission. And generally speaking, we got on extremely well. It's just these odd acts of utter ruthlessness that upset me. Not, I didn't cry about it, don't misunderstand me, but it was a bit over the top as far as I was concerned. There was no need to kill those two civilians. Absolutely none.
But he was good as a tank commander.
Yes,
he was extremely quick
with his soldiers. Well, he was quick twice. Instantaneously, off the road, blah blah blah, which saved perhaps the whole troop. Top speed. And Steele Brownlee was another guy who thought very very quickly, kept moving.
Did you know much about Steele Brownlee? I mean, because he was four troop. I think A squadron.
He was A squadron. I don't know what troop it was, but he certainly was A squadron.
Did he have a good reputation throughout the regiment?
I would say so. Certainly by the end of the war, yes.
And any other officers? Workman, you don't remember him too well.
I don't remember him. I would like to, but I know he's on that photograph in Bredstedt, but I hope to get. I'll write to this gentleman in Belgium and see if I can get that back.
Any other officers or characters that arrived late on in the unit there?
Well, there was a young officer, for example, when we were in Dern, the young officer came straight from officer training school, OTS or Sandhurst or whatever. He looked like a schoolboy. He really was tiny and meek-looking, and he lasted about 2 days, I think, before he was bowler-hatted.
Well, did they get rid of young officers who didn't fit in?
If they were no good, yes.
Well, would no good mean?
Well, incapable of taking command of a tank, let alone a troop. I mean, sometimes the selection boards did make mistakes. Not very often, but sometimes.
How would it show itself? I mean,
well, generally speaking, he'd probably ask advice from his tank crew if they were experienced. And this young man, I can't remember his name, this young man took over an experienced tank crew, and perhaps other officers realised he wasn't up to it.
Did some of the officers travel with the lid down? I mean, most of them, I think, had the lid up, but did some have the lid down?
Very few, as far as I remember. The driver and co-drivers are usually closed down, but although we had, as you know, in the turret ring, there were, the cupola ring, there were little mirrors all the way round. So they could travel closed down, but few of them did, as far as I know. Very rarely did Le Mans close down, and that was if we were being shelled with airbursts or things of that sort.
And what about the risk of mines? Could you talk about that a bit? I mean, were you aware of any risk of telemines or any other form of mines? And what was the best way of trying to minimise that risk, if you could?
Well, if you're given a line of advance, you can't. I mean, we hit one once. Did I tell you that?
No, let's let it.
Well, in northern Germany, we were advancing again. I think we were leading the troop. And there was suddenly a massive explosion, blue flash, paint peeling off the turret walls, and the tank must have, 33-ton tank must have gone a foot in the air, and it blew the track off. So we all very carefully bailed out over the back of the tank into the tracks we'd already made, as the ground was fairly soft, and waited until the engineers came up, Royal Engineers, and cleared the area, and then we repaired the track and carried on. It's not a nice experience, but I mean, no one was panicked enough to bail out or anything of that sort.
So Would most tanks survive running over a mine?
It depends on the mine, I think. A really big one, no. But the ordinary teller mines and things of that sort, yes, they would survive. They might get a track blown off.
It would probably immobilise the tank, then.
Yes, it would immobilise the tank, yeah.
Anything else about, any other stories generally across the whole period you recall? There was one incident where you said about Colonel Trotter and the Christmas...
Major Trotter, yeah.
Major Trotter.
We were up in Yorkshire, or Cumberland at the time, and this was at Christmas. And he used to strut around like a peacock with any more... he obviously hated the bloody job. I don't blame him for that, but...
Anything else you recall from the actual wartime in Germany.
Oh, incidentally, I think Trotter had a peculiar sexual activities. His Batman was undoubtedly a little bit bent, and he had a fascination, like me, I'm talking about Trotter now, he had a fascination with handguns. And I was on guard one night, and his Batman brought down some tea or cocoa or something, talking about guns, and he went up to Trotter's room and came down with about 4 pistols, German and American pistols, so he obviously had a fascination for handguns. That was another weakness of his, like me.
Anything else?
I should probably think of several things when you're gone, in which case I'll jot them down if you like.
That'd be helpful.
I can send them to you via the card.
Now, what about the last period of the advance was a dash along a motorway to Lübeck.
Oh yes.
Do you remember that? Because it was quite a last minute dash. What do you remember?
Well, we got into Lübeck just as a train came in from the Russian front with German soldiers on leave or deserting or something or another, and. I think the whole squadron were involved in this, searching all these guys as they came off the trains, and we stopped one particular young SS NCO and opened his case, and we found jewels and a P-38 pistol and sundry other things. And I had I forget the name of my driver at the time, but he was another guy who hated Germans, and he was going to shoot this guy, and I knocked his hand up, and I saved another German's life, in other words, made up for some other things. And it was obviously taken into captivity. I don't know what Lemon did with the jewelry. I know the back of the tank was piled with handguns and submachine guns. You couldn't see the engine cover for them. Whatever happened to them, I don't know. But then, of course, the military government came in then and declared a curfew. So Lemon asked me to go with him as his bodyguard. He commandeered a Volkswagen and asked me to go with him as his bodyguard while he patrolled the streets, just the two of us, you see. So it was about an hour after curfew, and some unfortunate young woman was about to cross the street in front of us, and Lamont drove right at her, and I think he fired a couple of shots at her. I don't think he hit her, but he was, again, this is his ruthlessness, you see. I was his bodyguard, but he was stopping the vehicle and taking shots at a young woman.
Any other incidents? Curfew largely respected?
This was in Lübeck, by the way, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. This young woman had probably been visiting a relative and thought she'd take a chance on it. And then allegedly, I don't know the truth of this, but apparently one of the, I don't know whether it was a 2nd 5th and 4th fire tank, went up to the dock area, and there was an U-boat just taking off, the story goes, and the tank engaged it, but I don't know the truth.
You weren't there,
no,
right?
I wasn't.
But I think you were billeted at Munkshagen for a while, just outside Lübeck, and you were there at VE Day. What do you remember of VE Day?
Well, I remember what I did. Being me, I put on my pistol and went for a long walk in the woods.
What were you thinking about?
Relief, quite honestly.
And what happened next? I think they went to Bredsted.
Yeah, and then we were very close, I remember, to the Danish border. And that was the first time I saw 2 British jet fighters, what were they called now, Gloster Meteors, and a whole load of German SS troops and other troops came down from Denmark having surrendered, and I think they were sort of quartered in an island off the coast there. But they were still pretty cocky, and I think these 2 jet fighters rather upset them. Oh, and I once saw an action, the Germans, they were way ahead of us with aircraft design, or certainly jet. A Messerschmitt 263, which was a very fast, agile twin-jet aircraft. And by that time, I think the Typhoons had been replaced by another Hawker. I've forgotten what it's called now. But anyway, it was an improvement on the Typhoon. And this jet was cruising along at about, I suppose, a couple of thousand, 3,000 feet above us. And these 2 Hawkers came in from port and starboard, and the pilot noticed them, and boom, like that, they didn't have a snowball chance of catching him.
And that was, of course, before VE Day. Over Germany, though.
Yeah.
And what was happening at Bredsted?
Not a lot. I mean, it was a very easy jobby there. We still mounted guards. Obviously, there were these little rumours about werewolves or werewolves, call them out how much you like, and we continued to be armed. For some while there was a no fraternization order in power, but it was one of the most stupid decisions ever made, in my view, that non-fraternization. It didn't last.
Why? Why was it stupid?
Why shouldn't we mix with the German girls? We hadn't had any girlfriends for a long, long time.
And did it was relaxed?
It was relaxed.
Did you get on well with the Germans?
I've never really disliked the Germans, quite honestly, Peter. I hate to say it, but I never really disliked them.
Was there any animosity from their side? How they had, you know, they...
I wouldn't have thought that... Well, they hid it well, let's put it that way.
There was a displaced person camp nearby. Were you aware of that?
I was aware of it.
Did you have any connection with it yourself?
Well, actually, it was I'm thinking of a village which was occupied by... Let me see, there were a lot of Russians and Poles there, and they were under the command of a young Russian lieutenant who had somehow managed to acquire a small caliber pistol. And I remember he carried a copper walking stick. And he was a very brutal young man. Of course, I think everybody except him knew that when they got back to Russia, they wouldn't be well dealt with. And I remember what I would call a middle-class Russian family, a man and two extremely attractive daughters, who pleaded with us not to be sent back. He knew what was going to happen. Obviously, he probably collaborated with the Germans, I don't know. But he was desperate for his daughters not to be sent back to Russia. And I felt really sorry about that. I really did. He went back, of course, and all these guys had a rough treatment from Stalin's boys.
The war was still going on in the Far East, and there was a question of service over there, either with the second or with the first, 5 and 4, 5. Yeah. Were you aware of that?
I was aware of that, yes. But for some reason or other, I was posted to the 1st Royal Tank Regiment.
When was that?
About August 1945, August, sometime like around there.
Why don't know why you were posted?
No, I honestly don't know. It may be that Dickie Leith realised that I was the only son of a widow mother, so it may be something to do with it. I doubt it, but...
So this was the 1st Royal Tank Regiment, and where were they?
In Berlin. That was a good, interesting posting.
In what way? What was going on there?
The city was in ruins, but it was a lot of fun to be had in Berlin.
In what way?
Well, girls, I had my first affair with a German girl. What was her name? Ingeborg, something or another, doesn't matter. And we were in, what's the airfield just outside of Berlin? Ex-Luftwaffe place. The British used it a lot when the Cold War was on, when they were flying coal and stuff of that sort. Forgotten the name of the
place. Doesn't matter. But what was happening there?
Well, we as I say, we had this Luftwaffe barracks, and we'd get these tiny little Russian biplanes come over on reconnaissance flights, and we had a lovely canteen, a nappy canteen, and who were we commanded by then? Manuel eventually became chief of the Imperial General Staff, though I shouldn't say Imperial, should I? And then we were taken over by an officer called Sleeman, who had never heard of shot fired in anger, but was a great runner, and I was good at running, so the regimental sergeant major, and he made sure I had an easy life.
So, what sort of recreations in Berlin? Was there much left to do, or was it flattened?
Not completely, but it was very, very badly damaged, as you can imagine.
How did you get on with the Soviet troops? Did you have much contact with them, or all the?
Well, I had a I had a girlfriend in the Russian zone, and I must say I had more bottle in those days. So we were on the outskirts, still trying Gatow, G-A-T-O-W, Gatow, how you pronounce it, who like. And the colonel, I think he'd arranged a football match between the 1st Royal Tank Regiment and one of the infantry regiments, and all leave was cancelled. I thought, sod that, so I went over the wall with a pistol in my pocket, I had to go through the French zone and got into the Russian zone without any problem. But on the way there, another little incident, I got on one of these streetcars, and there was a young Russian lieutenant on board, armed with one of those Shergen submachine guns, you know, with the drum magazine. And I was armed with my pistol, obviously. And it got a little bit nasty. Although we couldn't speak each other's language, I don't think we liked each other. And some old German guy got between us and calmed everything down. So eventually I got off the streetcar and made my way to Kopenhagenerstrasse, Neunundzwanzig Kopenhagenerstrasse. And had a very pleasant evening with the lady friend.
And was there a general threatening air in the Soviet zone that wasn't there elsewhere, or was it just an isolated...
Well, a lot of their soldiers were Asiatics. Now, they opened up a club called the Winston Club, just off the Kurfürsten Dam. And these guys would come in, and they'd order, by sign language, probably a cooked meal, like a roast beef and Yorkshire pudding and roast potatoes, and they'd get out a copy of Pravda, empty the plate into that, and bugger off. And they didn't know what lavatories were. Some of them didn't know what lavatories were. They were washing their clothes in, so I understand. There's one interesting thing there, another thing when we were in Gatow. The Russians used to raid across the border picking up girls, you see. So we used to send out a little patrol in one of those tiny armored cars, mounted a Bren gun. And our headquarters, or post, our forward post, was owned by a German film actor. And I mean a high caliber German film actor from the UFA studios. Werner Bateman, that was his name. A marvelous man, spoke about four or five languages, lovely wife and two lovely children. And we just sort of sat there and chatted with him, and he'd played Prince Albert opposite a famous American actress in New York. You know, he was good. He was about the equivalent of Michael Wilding or someone of that sort in this country. No, but I found it all very interesting. It really was.
And what were these patrols like in the armored car?
Well, on one occasion we ran off the road, and a truckload of Russian troops came down, and we thought, oh dear. Anyway, they all bailed out, about 30 of them, physically lifted the bloody thing onto the road again. And we parted good friends.
So it wasn't all bad?
No, it wasn't all bad.
With the Russians. And what about the black market? Were you aware of that?
I was aware of it, and again, being me, I was at the Winston Club on one day. I was approached by a very pleasant-looking young middle-aged woman with a lot of filigree silver, which she offered to exchange for, a tin of cigarettes or a tin of Nescafe. Being me, I said, well, here's some cigarettes, here's the Nescafe, take your silver away. And so I must have made a good German friend there. But a lot of the officers were doing very nicely out of it.
Officers, and I know... Officers in particular?
Not only officers. I know one of my colleagues, whose name I've forgotten, a big Scot, he got himself a load of shares in Siemens. Now, Siemens may not have been worth very much then, but if he held on to those shares, I should think he did very well out of it. I've even heard of senior officer taking a yacht, getting a yacht back to the UK. And of course, we all tried to smuggle pistols and binoculars back. Mine is at the bottom of Dover Harbour at the moment.
So, how long were you at Gatow?
Oh, certainly several months. And of course, it was coming up towards... There was a draw for the first to go to be demobbed, and I was quite early in it, so I was demobbed on the 27th of February 1947.
And you were still there up then? At Gatow?
No, we moved up to some miserable barrack somewhere near Bremerhaven, or somewhere near there, I think it was. It was a very cold winter. I know even the sea was frozen for quite a distance out.
And anything happened at Bremerhaven, or any differences?
Oh, well, yeah, there was some... one of the, of course, officers and men were much more friendly. In fact, many of the officers had even a similar background to myself. And I remember one captain, I think he might have been the... Yes, he was the adjutant, came over just to chat to those of us who were about to be demobbed. And I had done a lot in terms of running for the regiment. I surpassed the British University's record on the mile at one time.
Tell me about that, then, your running activities.
Well, I represented the squadron, the regiment, the brigade, and the division. But a mile was my best thing. As I say, the colonel, he'd been a great runner in the army, and so had the regimental sergeant major. And I think I must have had a following wind. But I did it in, he said, 4 minutes 29. Well, no, there's 30 seconds knocked off that now. But that was, according to the colonel, as good as the British University's best time. Don't know. But that was on 40 cigarettes a day.
Even then?
Yeah.
What about anything else happened at Bremerhaven anything you recall?
Well, this character came up. Oh, yes, I was telling you that.
Sorry, yes.
And I said, I wouldn't want to stay in the army unless I had a commission. I said it quite jokingly. I shall see the colonel. So off he goes. Sees Colonel J.T. the something Sleeman. And comes, not running back, obviously, but the colonel will support an application for a commission. I thought seriously about it for 24 hours, decided no. It was just as well, because C Squadron of the 1st Royal Tank Regiment were in Korea about 3 years later.
Were you looking forward to demobilisation?
Yes, I was. I think most of us were.
And what happened when you were demobilised? You know, I mean, what's the actual procedure?
Well, we were demobilised in Hull, and we sort of went the rounds. We had our trilby hat and our dreadful suit and shoes and socks, also everything you could possibly want, one off. And of course, we went back in uniform, but didn't change there. And I think we got £60, £62, I think it was.
Quite a lot.
Yeah, it was in those days, yeah.
And what were you to do? I mean, had your old job been held open for you?
No, it hadn't. The Ministry of Food had taken over this firm of flour. When I say flour, I mean F-L-O-U-R, flour importers. And, of course, other people had been brought in, so they told me to look around for an alternative employment. I joined a Bristol firm of civil engineers and builders.
What as?
As a general clerk. Then eventually I did some work at the College of Commerce, and eventually I handled the administration of one of the branches.
Now, you're a member of the South and South of the Border Group. Is that important to you? That you know, what did Why did you join? And what was it about it?
I forget now. It must have been about 1996 when I joined it. I think it was a chance to get in touch with any other survivors. Quite honestly, which would have been quite interesting to me.
Do you attend their reunions?
I've attended two. I organised the Bristol one, and I went to the Oxford one.
And did you meet people you knew, or was it worth it, you know?
Well, I wouldn't have recognised Ron Cox, although he was in C Squadron, but yes, it was worth it. They were very nice lunches, and it was quite interesting.
Are there any effects, you would say, long-term effects of your war service, either physically or mentally, good or bad?
Well, apart from the fact that I had gingivitis during the war and had to eventually have all my teeth out, that was where the gums recede and expose the nerves, and quite irritating. No, apart from internal piles, which I've had ever since that incident, and I've not got any hang-ups on it.
And no mental effects?
I shouldn't think so. What would you think so? I don't know. No.
Thank you very much.